I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. Our purpose is to encourage the arts, the ones that live in and around Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and also the arts from elsewhere that are the result of Lancaster or that Lancaster should simply know about. This is a first episode. We'll start with music in two parts. First, an interview with Lancaster area jazz saxophonist Ryan Kaufman. We'll talk about his CD Three Little Words, which will be available at live shows and online starting in March 2010. In part two, a conversation with Jason Wilbur, a singer, songwriter, and guitarist who recently made a stop in Lancaster to perform at one of our wood stove house concerts. Well, joining me here at the Wood Stove House is jazz saxophonist Ryan Kaufman. Thanks for being here.
You bet.
The reason that I really wanted to talk to Ryan is because there's a brand new CD that's coming out. In fact, it's in production as we speak. If I'm not mistaken. So yes. when will it be, let's just start with, when will it be available?
I would expect it available by March, I hope. I'm kind of crossing my fingers.
March 2010. And Ryan's been playing jazz saxophone in the Lancaster area since the early part of the 2000s. And tell me a little bit about your experience here in Lancaster and how you got into playing professional jazz sax.
I think ever since I learned about improvising from my saxophone teacher when I was in, I don't know, junior high school or something like that, and that there were these kind of musicians who could just make up the music as we go, or that you could play what you felt, mm-hmm. you know. I've been pretty fascinated with that concept, and I learned later on that there's a lot more to it than simply playing what you feel, and yet that is sort of the baseline that we all come back to, and we study and everything, which just so that in the end you can be free and play what you feel.
So it's always been jazz. Jazz has been in your heart. And
well, yeah. And, for various other things, I mean, I would say I'm a musician first before I would just simply label myself a jazz musician. But jazz is definitely the type of thing that I feel most drawn to in my playing and in my writing, in my listening habits and everything. But I'll be doing, I'm doing a new music, like a new classical music series coming up in March. I did a classical recital last fall where I did a lot of standard and recent saxophone repertoire for saxophone and piano, stuff like that. So,
but let's talk about the CD. The new CD is called okay. Three Little Words. Again, soon to be available. Where was it recorded?
We recorded on December 14th up at a place called Schoolhouse Productions, and that's just outside of Reading, Pennsylvania. So about a 45 minute drive from here.
Who runs that studio?
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's the studio's owned and run by a fellow named Marty Mellinger. He's a very good pianist himself and a musician, and he has a studio there at the property where he owns. It's an old brick one-room schoolhouse that that's the name that he's renovated into a really state-of-the-art studio. He has a beautiful piano there that he maintains very meticulously, and so I heard about him from a reference from a friend, and I checked around a little bit and decided to go with him for this session, and I was really pleased.
Excellent. And so Marty was the engineer?
Marty was the engineer, yeah.
Who were the players?
I called some friends of mine from the area, from the central Pennsylvania area here, who I think are among some of the top musicians that you would find in our area, much less really anywhere. Steve Mishi joined us on bass, and there's a great pianist who was kind enough to join us from York. His name is Matt Homiller. And another friend of mine on drums, his name is Chris Lozer, also from York.
And these guys, are they guys you play with live?
Yeah, they are some of the guys that I would call for a live gig, although we talked a little bit earlier, too, about the live scene tends to be a little different as far as who might be on any particular night.
Right. So let's talk about the title track, because we're going to hear a clip of it soon.
This one turned up one day. I've been trying to work a lot more in the past year or so, and I need to continue to do some more work too on my piano skills in general and just on understanding piano harmony. So I was working on a tune. I was just studying this. It's a classic Cole Porter tune called "I Love You," and I'm not going to attempt to sing it right now because I have a cold. But the Cole Porter tune "I Love You," and I started fooling around with the harmony to it. Sort of stripped it down and then added a few twists of my own with the harmony, with the chords. Originally I was thinking of, well, I'll do this arrangement of "I Love You," and it'll be this, hopefully it'll be a hip arrangement of "I Love You." And it ended up sort of going, making enough left turns that I decided I'd just write a new melody on top of it and we'll call it one of my tunes.
Gotcha.
Instead. And, you know, now that you ask that tends to be one of the main ways that I write pieces in general, is I tend to start with something that I'm sort of using as a template, either an older tune of mine or a study piece or a classic jazz standard or pop tune, and I might start tweaking it until it sort of becomes unrecognizable. But anyway, that's sort of the process that happened here with Three Little Words, and the band did a great job. I was wanting it to be this sort of just straight ahead, you know, burning kind of up-tempo tune, and it was nice.
Let's talk about track 3 from the CD, Shenandoah. You had mentioned before Three Little Words that oftentimes you take older tunes and do arrangements and things like that. So tell us about Shenandoah.
It's pretty simple on this one. I mean, I've just always loved that tune. And I've heard various versions of it, anything from like an all-male a cappella choir version to, you know, a very stripped-down acoustic folksy kind of version, or anything. But I just like the tune. I like the lyrics, and it's something I've always enjoyed singing. And so I sat down at the piano a few years ago and started working through this and trying to figure out, well, how could I make this? Is there a way I could make this tune work in a jazz quartet context, something that would be interesting for us to play because of the harmony, but would still sort of honor the melody and keep that front and center as far as its level of importance to the song. So as we were talking about earlier too, I lived in the Shenandoah Valley for a period of about 5 years. That's where I met my wife. She grew up there, so it's an important geographic region for us in,
sure,
in Virginia. It's a beautiful area, especially in the fall, and we have a lot of family and really dear friends who live there now.
Spend some time down there then?
Yes.
Each year?
Yes.
Great. We're going to take a listen to a little bit of Shenandoah from Three Little Words, the upcoming CD from Ryan Kaufman. Thank you. let's talk about the jazz scene in this area, the players. And by this area, I don't really just mean specifically Lancaster, but I really mean kind of the whole central Pennsylvania area. What's your experience with the players in this area?
There is a wealth here in the central Pennsylvania area of just some really high-level players and players with a lot of experience and a lot of ability who play beautifully.
How much crossover is there with the big cities in the area like Philadelphia or Baltimore? I mean, are there players who are from central PA that spend a lot of time playing in Philly? Or do Philly guys come out here? How does it work with the proximity to these larger cities in the jazz market?
There's a little of that going on, yeah. And there are a few, especially, you know, when you get to some of the guys who are at the pinnacle of the scene, who do get outside of the area quite regularly. I mean, one guy who probably most folks who follow the jazz scene around here would know of Tim Warfield, who's originally from York, Pennsylvania, and I think he still lives in York when he's off the road. But, I mean, the guy's just a master saxophonist. I mean, he's amazing, and he would blush to hear me say that, but he's a really great player. He's played with everybody. He travels around the world, you know, playing his music and recording albums and everything. I mean, so he's someone who is a great example of some of the best playing that this area has to offer. And he does play around here fairly regularly, too.
There's a great abundance of great jazz players. What about the rooms in relation to that?
I would say that the supply really outweighs the demand as far as the amount of players there are relative to the rooms where we can play. Mm-hmm. However, I think if you would ask some Philly guys about that, they would probably tell you the same exact thing. And I think in some respects it's kind of the same everywhere. So I don't know that it's a problem that is endemic to Lancaster per se or anything like that, but it does seem to be the state of affairs at the moment, yeah.
Is it enough for you as a performing, you know, live jazz saxophonist? Is that enough to sustain you? I mean, I know you're a professional musician, but do you have to compliment that?
No, yeah. When I was back in school, my teacher made it very clear to me that if I intended to do this full time, that I would need to combine several things to try to make a whole picture out of it. And he was definitely an example of that too. And I knew other guys too where, you know, we always have to combine things. So with me, when I went into graduate school for music, I started getting into the teaching scene in different fine arts centers, not-for-profit community arts centers, other schools, private schools, and just on my own too with my own little studio. And so that has become largely my bread and butter as far as sort of monthly income. But fortunately for me, you know, I really enjoy it. I really enjoy working with the kids and helping them to do better in their band situation at school, or if they want to audition for, you know, district orchestras or all state or regional ensembles. Or if they just want to be like first chair in their jazz band at school or something like that. And so I've been really having a good time with my students, just moving them forward and watching them grow. So that's an important part of what I do. Also, you know, my teacher urged me to learn the flute and clarinet, and you better do it quick because if someone calls you and says, hey, you know, we're doing West Side Story, can you do Reed 3? You have to be able to say yes, or you're not going to get that job. You
right.
Know? I don't do that full time. I don't do it very often, but I do get several calls a year to substitute or to come in and do different pit orchestra things for Broadway shows.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I should qualify that and say not on Broadway, but for Broadway type shows, musical theater.
Right. We have a beautiful theater here in Lancaster.
The Fulton. I've played there many times, and also the Dutch Apple and some other theaters over closer to Harrisburg or Philly as well.
Let's talk about, let's go back to the CD and talk about track 5, which is called Who's Your Daddy?
Yeah.
Might want to qualify that. It's spelled Hoosier like Hoosier. What's the story behind... Like
H-O-O-S-I-E-R, yeah.
And not Who's Your. What's the story behind this track?
Yeah, that's just, I mean, that's an example. There's a couple levels to it. That's sort of an example of my kind of warped sense of humor, where the tune itself, I mean, the piece of music that I wrote itself started out kind of as an etude or a study piece that I was writing for myself over the chord sequence, the chord changes to a much older tune, a really old pop standard called Indiana. And so that's where the Hoosier reference comes from. And so I was writing this study piece over the changes to Indiana, and then I sort of started fooling around with that at the piano, and I thought, well, what if I put this, you know, what if instead of having the piano actually state the harmony, what if we just put sort of a vague sort of D minor thing under it, which you'll hear the bass and piano both playing that sort of an open fifth, which is, it gives you a D minor feel, but it's sort of ambiguous too. So what if I do that? And oh, I kind of like that. And so I was playing with it for a while. And this is sort of just reflecting a tradition of a lot of what jazz composers do. Not everyone does this, but there are certainly many, many examples of guys doing this, of writing a new melody over an existing tune. And so that's what happened with this tune, and I liked how it came out, and I had my own little Donna Lee reference kind of hidden in there too. Donna Lee is a famous Charlie Parker tune that was also written over the chord changes to Indiana.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, and it's just kind of my little there are a few layers of puns
yeah.
in the tune, but then also it has sort of this a little bit of funky New Orleans kind of second line vibe that you'll hear Chris doing on the snare, and I get maybe that's the Who's Your Daddy kind of part to it as well.
So where can people find Ryan Kaufman playing live in the Lancaster area?
In the Lancaster area, I play at a few different places around here. There's of course the Belvedere Inn on Queen and Lemon Streets. I play there. It usually works out to about once a month that I do get in there. Sometimes I miss a month, but. I'm in there. There's another room on Harrisburg Pike called Rosa Rosa Ristorante, and I'll be in there in the summertime. Other than that, I occasionally get in at a place called Prince Street Cafe, which is right downtown across from the Fulton.
Yeah, right.
I also play, I mean, this is just a smaller, interesting thing, but it's a nice thing. I do the first Saturday of every month, I play a jazz mass at St. James Episcopal Church. Ron Barnett is the pianist and mm-hmm. the music director there at that church, and so every first Saturday of the month we have a jazz setting of the Episcopal Mass, and I'm there doing that with him too. It's fun.
Did you see they just did a Bob Dylan Mass?
I saw that, yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, I wanted to go to that, but it was unfortunately a conflict. doing some interesting stuff over there. That's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
And so where can people find out your schedule online?
If they go online, then you can look me up on MySpace. It's just MySpace/RyanKaufmanMusic, and I do have my itinerary there. Okay. And, you know, a bio and some photos.
Great.
Hopefully I'm going to have tracks up soon from the album.
And the CD will be available, I'm sure, at all live shows?
Absolutely.
I would hope. And anywhere online at this point, or anything you're shooting for?
It will be on iTunes. I have to work out some details with that.
But excellent. So look for it starting sometime in March of 2010. Thanks so much for being here and doing this. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Ryan Kaufman. Look for him in the Lancaster area playing jazz sax. So who is Jason Wilbur? Besides being a successful singer-songwriter in his own right, Jason has been playing lead guitar with John Prine for over a decade and a half. He's also played with other notable songwriters like Iris DeMent and Todd Snyder. And he hosts a weekly radio show in his hometown of Bloomington, Indiana. You can find him on the web at jasonwilber.net. That's JasonWilber.net. And I recently found him in the studio about an hour before he performed at a Woodstove House concert here at the Woodstove House in January of this year. So joining me is Jason Wilbur. First of all, welcome to Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Have you been to Lancaster, Pennsylvania before?
You know, I was thinking about that as I drove into Lancaster, and I'm not sure.
All right. Well, if you have been, then welcome back.
Thank you. It's a nice place to be.
Jason is in town tonight to perform at a Woodstove House concert. And a little bit about Woodstove House concerts, because this is a special night. This is the first one of 2010. And the Woodstove House Concert Series started in 2009, and we have a certain number of seats that we reserve or that we have available for reservation. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time that we've, quote-unquote, sold out.
Awesome.
Not only did we sell out, but we've had about as many inquiries to double the room.
Wow.
For tonight's performance.
Should we go over to Lowe's and just try to get some building materials quickly?
Just a tent.
Maybe
in one
a
of
tent.
Those big
yeah,
restaurant
one of those
heaters.
Gazebo type things.
Sure, we could just move them out back.
Sure.
It'd be fine. So thank you so much for coming. We're very excited to have you.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Jason's resume is sort of like a dream come true for the fan of the songwriter. Playing guitar for years and years with folks like John Prine, Emmylou Harris, Todd Snyder, Lucinda Williams, Over the Rhine, the list goes on and on and on. But not just being a guitarist for these other songwriters. Jason's also a singer-songwriter himself and a recording artist, and also the host of a weekly radio show in Bloomington, Indiana. So my first question for Jason is, how do you balance all of that, and where do you find time to write and record your own music when you're out on the road with some of these other artists?
Well, I don't know. I just kind of make it work, you know. You just, it's like anything else, you know, you just do what you need to do. And I guess one fortunate thing is, like, John Prine, who's, you know, really the main artist I work with, doesn't have a really hectic touring schedule, you know. Mm-hmm. So he'll maybe do 75, 80 shows a year.
Okay.
So that leaves me a lot of time to either do my own shows or back up other singer-songwriters.
Right, and then you just find the time and write the songs. Now let me ask you that: do you write on the road when you're out with other people?
Sometimes I probably write a little more at home, just because on the road, I don't know, for whatever reason, I'm rarely inspired to write when I'm on the road. I think just because it's kind of the grind of traveling and doing all the things you have to do every day to, you know, fulfill your obligations in terms of travel and sound check and feeding yourself and getting sleep and, you know, doing the show.
Right,
I mean,
right.
There's a lot to do. So I find when I'm have ideas for songs, it's usually more when I'm at home and there's a little more space for my mind to kind of relax.
Yeah. Now, over the years, at least, correct me if I'm wrong, but mm-hmm. 8 CDs total, 6 studio CDs, 2 live CDs. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
And what's the process for putting together a CD? In other words, do you have a bank of songs that you've been sort of writing over the years and, oh, well, I'm going to, you know, backburner these and maybe they'll feel right later? Or do you write for an album?
No, pretty much the former. I tend to have a batch of songs, a batch of unrecorded songs at any given time, you know, of, you know, usually there's, I don't know, a few dozen, but maybe only a dozen of them are ones I feel like are good. And the rest of them, either eventually I'm going to take out the good parts and turn them into something else.
Right.
Or I'm going to realize that I can just rework the whole thing and make it work, or I'm just going to trash it. You know? And some of those linger around for a long time, either because I haven't taken the time to really figure out what's going on with them, or I just keep thinking they're going to get better, you know, on their own or with age. I don't know. So it's sort of like I look at it as kind of a... I think that's part of the artistic process, you know, whether your medium is songwriting or whether it's sculpture or painting or writing, you know, you always kind of have little bits and pieces and things that are, you're not ready to just kill them, you know, you don't want to just throw them in the garbage because you've put something into them and you feel like they had some reason for coming about. So, but there are definitely ones that that just kind of, you know, they never really rise to the top
Right, but you know, maybe as an exercise, they serve some purpose to get you somewhere
else. They might have been the thing that had to get out of the way for the next thing, you know.
So speaking of CDs, on your website, Jason Wilber, WILBER.net.
Thank you, yes.
You are offering a free CD. If you just PayPal the shipping. Tell us about that.
That's just like a sampler CD. It has one song each from five of my CDs. And there's a special duet I did with John Prine on there. I think there might be one of the cuts might be a live cut. I haven't listened to it in a while. I need to remember what's on there. But it's just a way for people, because a lot of times people, like, you know, they just want a kind of a low entry point. They want to find out about your music, but maybe they don't want to buy a whole bunch of CDs right off the bat. So that's what I do. I have a sampler, and it's also something that sometimes I will... give away to people, like if people come to see me at a show or something.
Right.
Usually
you have bag full of them and you can just hand them out.
Yeah, that or I usually have a list where they can put their name and address, like if they buy a CD at one of my shows, and also send them this.
Gotcha.
You know.
The flowers don't grow unless she says they can. The sun won't rise until she waves her hand. Electricity is in her veins, and it pulls at me like that. When I walk away, I walk right back.
But talking about live performances now, mm-hmm. because you're here for a house concert, and I was just curious about your house concert experience, what you think of them and how they compare to other venues, being someone who's played in probably every kind of venue that you can imagine.
Yeah, I've played everything from a house concert for 10 people to Carnegie Hall for several thousand people, you know. So they are great in their, you know, for what they are. I think house concerts are really fun. It's a cool... intimate way for people to hear music. I think it's fun for the performers because it's a not totally different experience, but it's a very different experience from doing a theater performance or a club performance.
Sure.
And a lot of times for an artist who maybe could go to a town and would have a hard time filling a venue that's 100 or 200 seats, or if they're going to play a venue that was maybe 50 seats, maybe the only thing that would be available to them would be someplace that wasn't really suitable.
Sure.
I think it's a great alternative. I mean, and I think it also is very much of the time we're in the sense that it's very much a do-it-yourself thing. You don't need to get sanctioned by anyone or have any kind of, you know, you just go, well, I'm going to have a bunch of people over to my house, I'm going to have some music, and we're going to have fun.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that you don't have to get anybody's permission to do that, which is pretty cool.
I've heard some artists who've played at our shows and talked about other house concerts saying that there's almost an intimidation from an artist's perspective because you're literally 3 feet from the front row in most cases,
yes,
and you've got 30 or 40 people in a living room,
right? And it does. I don't feel that. I do remember, though, when I first started doing these, that that was a little strange.
Yeah.
You know, because you're used to some sort of at least psychological barrier between you and the audience, whether it's an orchestra pit or even if it's just, even if you're playing at a bar, there's usually an area that's the stage and
assumed,
you're on,
right.
You know, there's kind of
the neutral zone, right?
But with a house concert, it really breaks that down. It's really just like you're, everyone's together. You know?
And I think, too, at a bar or in a club, and up,
mm-hmm.
There's an assumed, you know, green room backstage area. There's a place you can sort of escape to. Whereas at a house concert, you're really mingling, you know, with everybody.
Sure.
And with the exception of maybe a bedroom off.
Right. Yeah.
Off
sometimes you have
room.
A little space where you can tune up and
exactly.
warm up a little bit. Well, yeah, I think it's fun. I think it's a fun challenge to kind of push your comfort. I mean, I like that kind of thing. I like being challenged.
Sure.
You know, to expand my ideas and comfort zone. So for me, it's fun. I do know some artists find it really awkward and don't like it.
Well,
so,
I can
see.
I mean,
everybody's different.
Yeah, it's about as naked as you can be from that perspective. You know,
yeah,
in front of
yeah,
people,
it is. So. It can be.
Shifting gears slightly, tell us a little bit about In Search of a Song.
Okay, In Search of a Song is a radio show that I host. It's on our local community station in Bloomington, Indiana, WFHB, every Saturday at 4 o'clock. And it's basically a show. I always enjoy talking about songwriting and art and the creative process with my friends who are musicians, you know. And at some point, I was having a really great conversation with somebody a few years ago, and I just thought, wow, this is really interesting. I wish I was taping it. You know, and then it's just somehow from that idea and that realization, it sort of evolved that would be a fun radio show. It would be to have people I know, you know, or people I don't know, but who are fellow artists,
sure.
talk about what they do and ideas about it and play some of their music. And so that's mm-hmm. what the show is. We talk about songs and songwriting and the creative process and where people come from musically and they also either play some of their music live on the program or we play some cuts from their CDs or some combination of that, you know.
So. Is that something that we can hear as far away as Lancaster, PA?
Yeah, it is. If you go to insearchofasong.com, which is a little bit under construction right now, but there are some podcast versions of the show on there. And then if you ever wanted to tune in at Saturday at 4 o'clock, I think if you go to wfhb.org, you could actually hear the show
live.
As it's broadcast, you know. And it's always taped ahead of time because I'm always traveling on Saturday mm-hmm. playing music,
right,
you know.
Right.
But you could listen in real time as it's broadcast.
In relation to that, can you tell us about the Cold Country Music Compilation CD?
Oh, sure. Cold Country is the companion CD to a film, which is a documentary, and the film's called Cold Country. And the film is about... largely about mountaintop removal, coal mining, and coal power in general, and how it relates to the communities in West Virginia and other areas where they do a lot of what's called mountaintop removal,
mm-hmm.
coal mining, which is a really damaging form of strip mining. It's a really powerful film. It's definitely something everyone should see, and it's really surprising to find out exactly what's going on with, you know, what most of us consider to be a national resource, which is the Appalachian Mountains, you know,
mm-hmm.
even though a lot of that land is privately owned, I think it does have some, we do have some natural, national interest in preserving it.
Yeah.
And so the CD was just a companion piece to go along with that film to help raise awareness about the film and help raise some money for the 13 environmental organizations that have a coalition called the Alliance for Appalachia, and they're all working on stopping mountaintop removal coal mining, basically. So that's the Sierra Club and Heartwood, which is the organization that sponsored the CD, and a bunch of other really great environmental organizations.
Who's on the CD?
The CD, we have a really, wow, it's a pretty cool cast on the CD. Let me see. There's a really great track from this little-known band called the Cedar Hill Refugees, and that features Ralph Stanley on vocals, which is probably, if I had to pick a favorite, that's probably my favorite track. It's pretty amazing. But we also have Willie Nelson doing Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind. John Prine is on there, Bonnie Raitt, Natalie Merchant. There's 18 tracks.
Mostly no names.
Right. You know, people, no, it's
up and comers,
cool.
Really.
Up and comers. Yeah. It's a pretty cool project. And there are several people on there who would fall into that category of up and comer,
sure,
or little known, yeah, you know, myself included. And, so that's what that is. And hopefully it's doing its job of getting people aware of that issue. That's really the whole point of it.
I love to watch the wind in the locust trees, and the way the sun feels so warm on me and on you too, and everyone who has come to sit out in this lazy afternoon.
So one last thing to wrap up, I'll put you on the spot.
Okay.
Can you give me just a handful of Desert Island Discs?
Ooh, good question.
Three's fine.
Well,
okay, five. No, three.
Shoo, maybe. This is really, really tough.
Nobody will hold you to this.
Okay, these are five with the knowledge that I'm not actually going to a desert island.
Right.
I would say Blood on the Tracks, Bob Dylan, Blood on the Tracks. I would say one of the Pink Floyd albums that I listened to endlessly as a teenager, probably be Dark Side of the Moon. I'd probably say, this is kind of cheating a little bit, but I'd probably choose the John Prine compilation Great Days, which is a 2-CD set, which has a lot of his
good one,
great
good
songs
score there.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know,
I you always go with a box set.
Yeah.
Like I go with the Floyd
two
box
for one.
Set.
Gosh, there's just so many in it, and it's always changing.
No, that's good.
Yeah, those would be three, but I'd be really sad on that island because I'd listen to those like crazy for.
So in other words, you would rather just have one 120 gig iPod? Is that what you're saying?
Geez, I guess I would. Yeah, if those are the choices. Of course, where would I recharge it? Of course, where would I play the albums in the first place?
Good point. Well, thanks so much for being here and doing this.
Hey, thank you, Jason. My pleasure. Good luck with your podcast.
Thank you, and we really look forward to seeing you tonight at the Wood Stove House Concert.
Look forward to doing it.
Around the Wood Stove is a production of the Wood Stove House with inspiration from the creative works of Lancaster. Our theme song is the old-time traditional tune, Buck Dancer's Choice, performed by Jeff Sims and myself, Jason Mundock. Find us on the web at woodstovehouse.com.